Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies, where we read and discuss foundational texts and key ideas that inform the way we think about organized work today. Talking About Organizations is a community resource supported by our listeners. To find out how and learn more about our program, visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. We also thank the Management Learning Journal and the European Group for Organizational Studies for their wonderful support. Now on with the show.
Welcome to episode 73, where we are discussing a 1977 article by Michael Tushman entitled Special Boundary Roles in the Innovation Process, which was published in the journal Administrative Science Quarterly. Joining us in this episode, we have Hila Lishvitz-Asaf, who is an Associate Professor of Information Operations and Management Sciences at NYU Stern Business School. This is part one of the episode, where we will talk about the main ideas in the paper. Hello and welcome to Talking About Organizations podcast. This is Pedro coming to you from Copenhagen.
This is Greta coming to you from the very little village in the Nets in Sweden.
Hi, and this is Hila coming to you from NYU.
Welcome, Hila. We are very glad to have you here.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I love your podcast.
Thank you. So today we are talking about the paper by Michael Tushman. And I thought that would be maybe a good way to start the conversation by just asking you, Hila, to give us a general outline of what is this paper about, right? What are the core ideas here?
Sure. So this paper is one of the fundamental classics of theories and research pieces around innovation. And it is around boundary spanning. So some people even look at this paper as the beginning of boundary spanning literature. Originally, there has been, and actually the paper itself cites other for the term of boundary spanning. So it does not claim to coin it. But I would say for us in the management and innovation literature, this is how we relate to the beginning of boundary spanning literature and innovation. I'm also personally related to the paper as Michael Tushman was my chair advisor and my mentor. So I'm happy also to talk, I think, about kind of the lineage of this paper, since his paper is, this is his dissertation paper. So I actually checked online, and since MIT dissertations are, you know, are freely available. So it's pretty amazing to see it's a year after graduation. It's the first time I looked that it's published at ASQ. We can all wish that our papers would be a year after already, right, at ASQ. And the paper talks about boundary spanners and what their role is for innovation. So he looks at a laboratory. The amount of individual he studies is 345 different individuals across 58 projects. The unit of analysis is in the project. And he looks at how they span boundaries within the laboratory, outside the laboratory, outside the whole organization. This was the days that R&D laboratories were big and kind of isolated for their own. The way he studied was also, I think, unique. And he asked people to report about their oral communication, what we would call today informal communication and knowledge sharing, not the documents that they write and not those that were just a quick chit-chat socially, but the oral communication that has to do with work that is usually not documented, right? Back then, especially. Now, if we think in the days of Zoom, it's very different where everything is recorded for a few days a week for 15 weeks straight. And then he looked at the performance, evaluated subjectively according to Lawrence and Lorsch kind of performance metric, and saw the differences in the communication patterns and those that span more boundaries and the relationship to their performance, being stars or not in R&D. So that's, I would say, kind of the gist of the paper. And
okay, so maybe we can rewind a little bit, right? Because I think what's interesting is that this paper has both had an important impact in the field, but also it's already speaking to some of the nascent literature. It's speaking to these previous studies exactly about R&D and innovation. And as you said, the idea that achieving information, reaching out from information, both outside organizations, but also outside the lab, and also being able to mesh these different kinds of knowledge from different functions was the core challenge of innovation. And the paper starts from that premise, and I think adds much more depth because it takes the issue of boundary roles and expands that and talks about these so-called stars, which are people that are defined as having almost like gatekeeper ambassadorial role, in which they are the people through which the information flows. And they talk about this two-step process, that it's not that everyone is talking with everyone at the time, but there's this kind of specific points of contact. And they talk about them as both gatekeepers, which are the people related to the outside, and the organization liaison, the liaison roles, which are the ones between the laboratory and other functions and across functional areas. And in looking at that, they try to establish, more like confirm, what these roles do and how they exist and what is the part of the configuration in which they play a role.
Definitely. So to weave in kind of the personal details, Michael Tushman, his advisor and chair was Tom Allen, who's the founder of a lot of the innovation theories at MIT. These were the days, you know, these are the 70s. These are the days where innovation theory just started. Like back then, you couldn't say even though, you know, you're an innovation researcher or a scholar. It was just a sub thing. But that those are the people that started. And Tom Allen is known for one of his books around looking at how people talk across department physically at MIT. He would look at the structures and the buildings and say, I think it's really important where we locate, you know, the labs and who's sitting near whom. And he would look into architecture of buildings and labs and understand the importance. So I think this is really kind of in the background as the inspiration to the information processing perspective that back then was the dominant one, that what we need to think is how information is flowing and what are the physical, you know, from Tom Allen's work, what were the physical infrastructure that can enable it. And then in Michael Tushman's work, it was the communication patterns that can actually enable it.
Right. And in that sense, it's also interesting to look a bit into, you know, the theoretical background of the paper. Indeed, this information processing approach was really central in this paper, but it also draws upon systems theory to understand the organization. And knowing a bit more about Michael Tushman's work, organizational design being very dominant in the work that followed here, really interesting view of how to understand the organization. And this paper, together with, I believe, the following papers that he wrote, together with Scanlon, published in 1981, they really popularized the idea of boundary spanning as a concept in the organization and management field. And that's why I think this is such a foundational one. And if you look at the work that followed after this paper on boundary spanning in innovation, in cross-boundary collaboration, cross-boundary coordination literature, you know, most of those papers were qualitative studies. And I think one of the nice things here is that it's such a refined quantitative study, how to understand who are the boundary spanners and how can you pinpoint them. And one thing I liked about the paper is how he makes this distinction between what you mentioned, Hila, like, you know, the boundaries within the lab between different projects, the boundaries within the organization between the R&D lab and the rest of the organization, such as, for instance, marketing being an important partner there, and the boundaries outside, for instance, to universities where you collect the knowledge. And I see, you know, knowing that this paper came from his dissertation, this idea of open innovation already existed in the 1977, I would say.
Completely understanding the importance of boundaries is really amazing. To relate to what you said, I think there are a few interesting points. One is around the information processing theory. You know, we tend to neglect it because today, let's say it's less of a popular theory, but still all the knowledge theory of the firm and knowledge work and knowledge boundaries, I think we can see the seeds to it in this paper and the way he measured. On the qualitative, quantitative, what I like about it is that it's field research. And he looks at the work itself. So to me, many times, at least that's what I tell my students, I care less if you count the amount of papers or if, you know, but it's more about looking at the work of the R&D scientists, the engineers, the professionals themselves, because sometimes the work is just a black box and we kind of look at the outputs and the inputs and no one really looks at what people do and how they talk and kind of the day to day. So I like the granularity of his methods, the fact that it was few days a week asking them who they talk to, you know, and how. That's something that today, I don't know even if it will be like how we would categorize these methods, because it's not the big quant that we usually, when we say quant, people think about, right? But it's not that in-depth of sitting with the people like the ethnography. But I would say it is definitely field research It does show, I think, how the work of the people needs to be put in the center and not just kind of input-output type of perspective.
Yes. I think it would be also be interesting if we try to go through what are the findings, right? And a little bit of the architecture of the paper, because I think one of the interesting and richness and generative nature of the paper comes from being able to organize the literature in terms of the different boundaries and get at a more fine-grained detail. So I think that the overall arch of the argument is that, yes, there is a dilemma in innovation, that is this need for information, but at the same time, the challenge of crossing boundaries and different type of boundaries, as Greta just said, the external, the one of the lab in our departments, and the internal. And also, Michael Tushman starts with the discussion of the different phases of innovation. In different phases, there are different kind of technical work that's required and some kind of knowledge or interactions become more or less prevalent. And then he uses the previous theory to generate some hypotheses that are going to be tested. And the main hypotheses are related to the role of these superstars, the super communicators, or these kind of, you know, points of contact, we may call. And he differentiates between the gatekeepers, right, which are the ones that are dealing with the external outside part of the organization, and the liaison roles, which are the ones doing the liaison work between the lab and the other departments and within the lab across different projects, different departments within the lab. So those ones come from more information processing theory, but the other ones come from contingency theory in terms of how can we expect to have more boundaries roles? So in what conditions they come up, you know, is that what always exists? Is that really necessary? And he uses the knowledge that we have on uncertainty and the nature of the task, the nature of the environment, and how, in principle, with more uncertainty and complexity, one would expect more type of liaison roles because, you know, in principle, more mutual agreements and more mutual adjustments would be needed, right, for these projects. And then he goes about testing that through these very interesting methods, which are based on fieldwork, as Hila just said, and is able to confirm that the liaison roles do play an important role. They do exist. There are just people that you can identify as playing these important functions, so to speak. The gatekeepers, not so much. It seems that the access to outside information is a bit more dispersed. The other aspect that in the hypothesis that I think is interesting is that he tries to differentiate between what kind of information is being reached out for, right? In terms of it is more related to science itself or more operations. And that is another hypothesis that is confirmed, that in these people that do the gatekeeper, although it is more diffuse than expected, there is a type of specialization. Some people are the appointed or the natural points of contact for particular types of information.
I think that's really interesting. So talking about the second theory, as you said, that is brought is contingency theory. So just to shed more light on the, you know, how things are connected, the other advisor was Paul Lawrence. And also Mike Tushman is the Paul Lawrence professor at the Harvard Business School. So definitely Lawrence and Lawrence, sure you had an episode on contingency theory. So definitely contingency theory is felt and represented here, both in the way, in the theoretical background and as well as in the performance measurement. He even uses how they think about performance. So you can see the intellectual footprint of contingency theory. The other one is the interdependence. And Greta talked about the interdependence of the task. And that's what I also mean in like looking at the work, right? It's very granular to look which tasks depend on which departments. And therefore, do you need to span these boundaries or not? And that's engineering background. I would say the MIT spirit that is dominant also in the paper. Today, I don't think even we can put all these theories and all these different perspectives in one piece, right? It's rare to see it. And that's why I think it's powerful, because you get all these different theories and you're able to measure them, to nicely operationalize them, and to show results that really started a whole line of studies that realized, wait, we need to understand these roles. They are not usually formally stated. People kind of naturally tend to do them, some more, others not. And why and what are their implications? So I see that as the beginning. That's why I think the specific findings are neat, because he was able to find crystal clear findings in such measuring so many different dimensions. But I think the more important part of this paper is how it led to all this line of work from network theory all the way to kind of micro literature, looking at the characteristic of these boundary spanners. And in the middle, of course, a lot of the fieldwork and the qualitative literature that looks at the practice at what these people do. So I think that's kind of the launching point to all these streams of literature around the role, the work, and the implication of spanning boundaries for innovation and for collaboration and new knowledge production in general.
There are several things that I could add to the conversation. And first, looking at, you know, how Tushman identified those communication stars, the boundary spanners. And here I was thinking about a podcast we recorded a few weeks ago from Dalton, his book from the 60s on Men Who Manage. And in his first chapter, he has like this image of the traditional organizational chart. So who is the head of the production plant, who is below him, who are in the staff, who are in the line. And then he has this very famous image of the informal structure of the organization, who were in power, which was like vastly different from the formal one. And I believe like one thing that Tushman did in his study is really showing like who informally was in charge of how things were done, how information was being divided in the organization, and perhaps what is left out of this paper. They probably had other roles in the organization as well. And to think about this link with contingency theory, and of course we know from scholarship in this area that the nature of the work really matters. And what I really liked about this paper is it's on page 595, where he has his table where he distinguishes between different categories of task characteristics. And he also shows like part of his survey that he did every week. Or I don't know if he did this one every week, but he at least asked his respondents to identify like where they think their work belongs mainly. And he distinguishes between basic research, applied research, development, and technical services, where, you know, the basic research is like the most complex type of work and the technical services is more technical. And he also talks about like what type of knowledge is involved. For instance, applied research is a basic knowledge. Basic research is new knowledge that needs to be developed. And for instance, the technical services is really just recombining different types of knowledge. And this is where you see where the lineage starts, because Tushman wrote about organizational boundaries. But for instance, the work of Paul Carlisle on knowledge boundaries is really at this paper is at the foundation of his work. It inspired his work, where he identifies them as different types of knowledge boundaries that can exist. And using that same theoretical framework of, you know, the information processing approach, thinking about what are these different types of boundaries emerging in communication. And when you look at Tushman, he also he describes this like the problem in communication when basic and applied people talk to each other. And he writes about how when you're working in groups, you kind of develop your own code of how you speak. Mm-hmm. And that this is emerging within the community around the work and the task at hand, but that people in other parts of the organization or even different projects in the lab might have a very different encoding in their communication than your group. I think that's one of the gems of the paper, like being able to reveal that and showing that. Mm-hmm. And I guess it also shows like the power of having this social science approach to understanding the complexity of innovation.
There is another, we'll probably talk more about Paul Carlisle and all the lineage right in the second part. And I have some ideas on the formal informal, but I'll save that. The other, I think, interesting point is that, as I see it, the paper confirms through empirical data that these liaisons roles exist, that the gatekeepers tend to specialize. So the people that are reaching out, you know, reach out for a particular source and types of knowledge, but also going back to the contingency theory, that the task in itself is important. And the existence of these roles varies depending on the nature of the task and the nature of the environment. So the demand kind of, you know, arises differently according to the nature of the work. And I agree, the fact that he paid attention to what kind of project is being conducted, right? Is it more pure science? Is it not? And that already showed that these roles becomes more or less prevalent given the nature of the work itself, right? So I think there is also another important fine tuning and, you know, contribution in the literature to show that this is, well, contingent, which is the powerful insight of such approach. It varies according to the work, the environment, and we may expect different things in different situations.
Yes, and it's hard to be able to do in one field research both the internal and the external kind of boundaries, right? To look both at inside the organization, at the work, at the level of what type of project, you know, what exactly are the needs, what is the type of task, the interdependency within, and also at external cross kind of getting outside of the organization boundaries. And I do think it's because of the Lawrence and Lorne perspective that always talked about both, that he felt that it is necessary part, that you cannot just talk about inside or outside. You know, back then people understood it. It's like you have to look at everything together. And I think that relates to what Greta said, that we can see the seeds to open innovation already in that sense, since for many years after this paper, people did not. They would chunk the two. You had studies that only looked internally and studies that only looked externally. One study that I think is kind of different and was also influential is the study of Lee Fleming and Ezra Zuckerman of Teams, that they really looked at how they communicated internally and the network. Basically, this study was kind of the launch of many streams of literatures. As I said, one of them was network literature that then started to quantify and measure these connections on a whole different scale. And they looked at the communication internally and also externally. So I see that as kind of the calling, the sign that says we need to look at both and both matters, and we need to be able to measure better and understand how exactly. And then the work of Lee Fleming, Ezra Zuckerman and others, Ron Burt, of course, then, you know, a stream of literature around the importance of boundary crossing and spanning for innovation and quantifying it even more and trying to get to real clear models.
And I think that's one of the common trends we have in the podcast, that every time we read these classics, we realize that some of the perceptions people have of a particular perspective or field of research is not necessarily homogeneous, or is not necessarily sometimes even accurate, right? We have the famous episode on Maslow, who never drew a pyramid, as we talk about in our episode, right? But this is a bit of that here as well, that, you know, Lawrence Lorne spoke of the external as well, and you can see it in this paper, but some people have this idea that, oh, those people were just looking at the inside, and then the open system came and showed there is more to the story. But, well, in some extent, that already existed, right? That it was, there was such awareness of that, which sometimes I think in the manual type story of OT gets forgotten.
It's the lens that we put on when we also read the paper. So to date, we are how many years after? Almost many years after, right? So many years after, it's easy to say and easy to look and say, oh, we can trace this, we can trace the back. I think it's harder to do it when we're doing it. But this paper shows why it's important not to cut thin papers, because if you keep them rich, then you are able to have this richness of perspective, both theoretically and the measurements. And today, unfortunately, many times authors are being told, you know, less, one point, one paper, one theoretical perspective, you know, focus, just choose, you know, you're confusing us, too many types of boundaries, too many this. And it's a shame. I mean, if it's a great study like this one, then the fact that you are able to put all these different theoretical lenses years after and reinterpret and understand, and that's because of the richness, I think, of this paper.
I wanted to draw attention to the latter part of the findings. We didn't touch upon it yet. And it's about like this part on the distribution of these special boundary roles within the R&D lab. Later on in the paper, where he describes that, where Toshman describes like which hypotheses were supported, he also has this very nice graph where he shows the distribution of boundary roles, where he shows like how that links to performance. And at first you see like the increase in how adding boundary roles might add to performance, but there's kind of an optimum. It's about two in a project team. And then you see the decline in performance again. But he also mentioned that actually not all projects were the same. in terms of their contents, and that the distribution also depended on, you know, what type of knowledge was being used, what type of work did the people do. And he kind of made the point that the more complex projects had more boundary roles, but the ones that were high performing had less roles than the ones that were, you know, average or low performing, according to the people that evaluated the performance, which I believe were kind of the management of the R&D lab where he held interviews. And I thought this is really interesting. What he pointed out here is that, you know, like there's no ultimate standard. So this is like really contingency thinking. Is really dependent on the type of work that you do. And you have to figure out for your team what is the optimum. And here he also brings in that perhaps like this distinction between the high performing and the low performing projects that were comparable in task complexity, but had different types, different amounts of boundary spanners in the project. He pointed out the coordination cost of having too many boundary spanners, too many people bringing in the information, having to do the encoding, and that sometimes perhaps it might be better to just have one.
Yes, especially the changing environment, right? The speed of the changing environment, which is something that we see until today, that it is so important to look at the nature of the environment and its speed. You know, if you think about the work of Kathy Eisenhardt afterwards and how it's all of a sudden people realized, wait a minute, like if you're in such a crazy dynamic industry, you can't think in the same way as a slow industry. And here you have just a beautiful figure, as you said, Greta, showing it, right? Like there is a very clear distinction for the changing environment versus stable environment. So I think it's very important. The coordination costs are not to be taken lightly. And we see it today. I have to say, you know, we are right now, it's end of 2020, a crazy dynamic year. Teams and organizations that were trying to have a lot of those extra communication and coordination roles, it is very hard to do, regardless even to virtually or in person. It is something to take into account, how you do coordination and whether it speeds you up or whether it slows you down, whether you need to strip some of this coordination.
And that concludes the episode for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and found it valuable. If so, please consider subscribing through your favorite podcast service and you won't miss an episode. We also welcome your feedback, so if you liked or didn't like something, or have a correction or suggestion for us, please get in touch via Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or our website, www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. Finally, we would like to thank some wonderful people for supporting the show. Sarah Audner, Leon Prieto, Hadi Shaheen, Marshall Reiner, Alice Barbosa, Thomas Roulet, Heiko Schmidt, Barton Friedland, Guldem Kara Mustafa, Roberta Bernardi, Marina Timmer, Bernard Hogan, Eddie Hunsinger, Fiona Knight, Peaks Craft, Timothy Paul, Willy Leidon-Wirte, Gabriel Van Bunnen, and Clara Lux. It's easy to support the show, and all you have to do is go to our website, where a donations button will greet you. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you for the conclusion of this episode here on Talking About Organizations.